I'm Marty Moscoe. Welcome to Radio Times. QAnon emerged from the dark troll-infested corners of the internet a few years ago, promoting the conspiracy theory that famous celebrities and high-profile Democrats are devil worshippers engaged in a global network of child sex trafficking. And if that weren't outlandish enough, QAnon claimed that President Trump and former FBI Director Robert Mueller were working together to uncover this deep state cabal. More recently, QAnon followers are touting the idea that 5G cellular networks are spreading coronavirus. None of this is true, obviously. A few years ago, the FBI called out QAnon, saying it was a potential source of domestic terrorism. And just this week, Twitter suspended thousands of accounts that have been spreading QAnon messages, saying they violated Twitter policy and could lead to harm offline. But QAnon has made some inroads in the GOP, with candidates aligning themselves with this fringe site, and the president and members of his family and administration retweeting QAnon tweets. Today on Radio Times, taking QAnon seriously, and later, why people believe conspiracy theories. And we begin with Alex Kaplan. He's senior researcher at Media Matters for America, joining us by Skype. And Alex, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me on.
Who is the Q in QAnon?
So Q claims to be this secret government insider claiming to have Q security clearance in the government that supposedly has the inside scoop on some secret plan to essentially that Trump is working with or was working with special counsel Robert Mueller on some secret plot to basically take down his perceived enemies, the deep state, this secret network of pedophiles and this cabal and has kind of grown out from there.
Do we know if that's true, that there was someone in the government who sort of jump-started QAnon?
Yeah, so the conspiracy theory is baseless.
Of course. I understand that, but someone is behind it or some ones are behind it.
Yeah, it's not totally clear the person or persons behind Q. That is still unclear exactly, but someone has been, or people have been posting as Q on some message board sites since 2017.
In fact, I think the first post was October 28th, 2017, and it said that Hillary Clinton was going to be arrested. Obviously, it did not happen, but that seems to be the first signs of QAnon was alive and doing stuff.
Yeah, so it did start around that time on 4chan, which is a message board site that is known for harboring and featuring white nationalist trolls.
And help us understand it within the last couple of years, and we will talk about members of the GOP who seem to sign on to some of the QAnon tweets and belief systems. Things like Pizzagate and some other incidents, really scary incidents, that are aligned with QAnon.
Yeah. So Pizzagate in some way was kind of the forerunner to QAnon. Like QAnon, it basically pushed that there was this secret network, secret trafficking ring. In that case, specifically, it was focused on a pizzeria in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. And that resulted eventually in a gunman opening fire on that pizzeria. Pizzagate has essentially been incorporated into QAnon. It does include a believing that there's this pedophile ring going around, but it's definitely encompasses more than that. I've personally called QAnon Pizzagate on steroids.
On steroids, meaning that, and as kind of horrifying as this incident was, that a man actually went to this pizza store, apparently well known in Washington, D.C., or pizza restaurant, with a gun ready to go into the basement to liberate these children, obviously based on completely false information.
Yeah, there's no basement. There's no trafficking ring in this pizzeria. It's just a pizzeria. It's totally false. But it was a sign that this type of conspiracy theory could gain traction online, on these far-right message boards, on multiple social media platforms.
When you talk about even beyond Pizzagate, QAnon on steroids, give us an example.
Well, so what I think part of what I had in mind in that is that, like, well, a couple things. So it does include the sex trafficking stuff, but it just includes more. Like, I guess one example is, I believe this year, Q, the figure behind the conspiracy theory, had posted about Disney, I believe about like the head of Disney, suggesting that it was part of the conspiracy theory. I believe recently it's tried to rope in Pinocchio as part of the conspiracy theory. And the other thing why I say that is because, like Pizzagate, and even more than Pizzagate, it's been tied to multiple acts of violence, not just Pizzagate, that one specific example. It's been tied to multiple murders. It's been tied to multiple kidnapping attempts. A man tried to block the Hoover Dam who was armed, who supported it. And the FBI released a field office released a memo last year,
right,
that essentially warned that it was a potential, or its supporters and the conspiracy theory were a potential domestic terror threat.
How does Pinocchio fit into all this?
It's honestly, it's a little even hard for me to explain. I think it had something to do with Jeffrey Epstein, which has also been tied now into the conspiracy theory. It's very convoluted.
Do we know how many people are actual followers or believers? I believe that is what they call themselves, believers in QAnon.
Yeah, so it's tough for me to give a specific number. I have seen, I mean, I'll give one example that I think kind of maybe shows this. There was a few months last year where, for certain reasons, Q wasn't able to post. And it finally was able to post again last November. And its first post was to a YouTube video that was showing the American flag. When I checked, I was watching this basically happen live. And when I clicked on the link, the YouTube link, the video didn't seem to have that many views, maybe just a few thousand. And I believe within a day, it had gotten something like 170,000 views.
Wow.
So I think that shows that there's at least some significant amount of traction or followers that this conspiracy theory has.
You know, there's always a risk, a danger in talking about conspiracy theories, especially ones as, frankly, as potentially dangerous and outlandish as QAnon, that even just by talking about it, we are promoting it. How should we, or how do you wrestle with that?
Yeah, so I wrestle with amplification of disinformation, disinformation, and conspiracy theories daily. Right. There's a bar, right? I mean, there is a risk that if you are amplifying something that didn't get enough traction, you're giving it more promotion than it deserves. But you could also be too late, or you're taking a risk not discussing something if it's gaining traction.
Right.
There is a term that I've seen used kind of for this concern called like a tipping point, where that bar has been reached where it's okay to talk or to deal with or discuss or try to debunk some type of disinformation or conspiracy theory going around. And in my opinion, with QAnon, we are well past the tipping point, well past it, to discuss this, to grapple with it, to debunk it, to point out that it's false, and to warn about it. I believe it's fine at this point to talk about this.
And by tipping point, the fact that it's made some inroads in the Republican Party. We've got a president who has retweeted QAnon tweets, I think, 150 plus times. Is it because it is being apparently taken seriously by members of this administration, the president's family, members of the GOP?
Yeah, so I think the conspiracy theory, I mean, I should mention, the conspiracy theory foremost is a pro-Trump conspiracy theory. That's what it's based on, supporting President Trump. And I think in some ways it's become sort of the part of the, I guess, MAGA world,
mm-hmm,
for lack of a better word, which means like it helps spread pro-Trump narratives, pro-Trump claims, pro-Trump campaigns. And I think it, as a result of that, sometimes it's stuff gets amplified by people in the administration, whether intentionally, unintentionally, by people in Trump's orbit. And yeah, I think that's why.
Do you think the president, I mean, I'm asking you to get in the head of President Trump, but do you think he retweets it because it is pro-Trump, or there's something more insidious at work here?
Yeah, so it's hard for me to say for sure, but I do think I'm guessing that sometimes, you know, a lot of the stuff he retweets that are from QAnon promoting accounts fits pro-Trump narratives, pro-Trump themes, stuff that Trump himself has been pushing. So I think it fits in the kind of the agenda he's been pushing. And often they just happen to be QAnon accounts.
In preparation for the show, I was doing a lot of reading. And so it is clearly a rabbit hole that you go down when talking about or even trying to understand QAnon. But I saw that Sebastian Gorka, who's very much a supporter of Trump, calls QAnon garbage.
Yeah, so Gorka has come out. Sebastian Gorka, who used to work in the White House, is pretty anti-Q. He's criticized it on multiple occasions. QAnon supporters actually have gone after him and his wife in the past. I should note, that said, that he has trafficked in at least one major narrative that was basically originated among QAnon supporters, which is that Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Justice Ginsburg, was somehow incapacitated or dead. That was a conspiracy theory that was going around, I believe, in sometime about last year, and it started spreading from QAnon supporters to other parts of, I guess, the pro-Trump orbit. So I guess that kind of just shows that even among sometimes its critics, its material per se has spread.
We're almost up on a break here, but I mean, Twitter is such a sort of perfect venue for all these conspiracy theories because you can say anything, frankly, although Twitter has pushed back on QAnon, and you can be anonymous and essentially, you know, find fellow believers.
Yeah, I mean, Twitter, before this crackdown or leading up to it, had really become a major ground or center for QAnon supporters. As you said, there are accounts that don't give their real names, that have amassed large followings, that have been able to push QAnon stuff, other misinformation, and have been able to sometimes lead harassment against people. So yeah, it's been a major center.
That is Alex Kaplan, our guest in this hour of Radio Times, and we're talking about QAnon. He's a senior researcher at Media Matters for America. You can join us. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. There are ways to tweet legitimately on Twitter, and you can call us at phone number 1-888-477-9499. Much more after this short break. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Musk.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Wayne, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. We're talking about QAnon, which has been gaining influence in the last couple of years, growing in popularity and gaining some traction, actually, in the Republican Party. And again, Alex Kaplan is our guest. He's senior researcher at Media Matters for America. And again, you can join us, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also send us an email. You can tweet us. I'm multitasking here at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. I do want to play a clip, Alex, and this is actually on the 4th of July. This is former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn and his family taking the oath of office, followed by a slogan that the followers of QAnon use, which is "Where we go, one, we go all." Let's give it a listen.
and that I will well and faithfully
discharge the duties,
discharge the duties
of the office on which I am about to enter.
Of the office of which I am about to enter.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Where we go one, we go all.
Where we go one, we go all.
God bless America.
God bless America.
So, Alex, what do you make of that?
So, former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn had taken, as you showed, had posted a video of himself taking an oath that Q had posted a few weeks ago. That is kind of a well-known oath already, but with the exception that at the end it has the QAnon slogan, where we go one, we go all. It's definitely stark.
Mm-hmm.
I will note that it did not come out of nowhere. There have been signs that Michael Flynn has been signaling support for QAnon since at least 2018. There have been photos that have gone around online of him giving autographs and books with the QAnon slogan. I believe he's liked QAnon content and follows it on Twitter. His family members his siblings have expressed support for QAnon. His lawyer, Sidney Powell, has gone on QAnon shows.
Oh.
So this did not come out of nowhere.
Well, let me quote what his lawyer said. What am I looking at? I'm looking at the New York Times here. Said that Mr. Flynn was quoting or referring to a 16th century poet when he said that. Does that hold water for you?
No. He was signaling to QAnon. That is false.
I thought it was interesting also on July 4th, the president retweeted something like 14 QAnon related tweets. And I don't want to be paranoid here, but is there a connection there?
So, yeah. So on the 4th, I found that he had amplified 14 times accounts that had promoted QAnon. Some of those accounts would actually had QAnon stuff right in their profile. I don't know. I don't think I have evidence that these are connected, but I think it just again shows that this conspiracy theory has gained traction, has become big in the pro-Trump orbit, in, I guess, MAGA world, for lack of a better term, and it continues to have its stuff spread.
Well, let's talk about some of the candidates that are running for office. Not all of them won, but several of the, I think 15 or 16 of them did win their primaries. And they seem to at least affiliate themselves to some degree with QAnon. Let's talk about Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia. Who is she and what has she said about QAnon?
Yeah. So Marjorie Taylor Greene is a candidate in Georgia. She actually hasn't quite made it to November yet. She's almost there. She still has to win a runoff. She didn't get 50% of the vote, so she's heading to a primary runoff. But she is favored to win that, and if she wins that, probably in the general. She is a candidate that has expressed strong support for QAnon over the years. On Facebook, I had found a post of her saying, great post from Q today. Using the QAnon slogan, she used that, I believe, multiple times on Twitter, the QAnon slogan, where we go one, we go all.
Mm-hmm.
There's video of her talking about Q, explaining Q, like calling it a patriot and worth listening to. She hasn't talked about it as much recently, but I haven't seen any evidence of her denouncing it.
I'm going to Vanity Fair here, that she's quoted as saying the QAnon was a, quote, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to take this global cabal of Satan-worshipping pedophiles out.
Yeah, I mean, so QAnon, again, is part of the conspiracy theory is that it's that Trump is, or this Pope plot is working to take down this secret cabal that pedophiles. It's a major part of the conspiracy theory.
Is this, I mean, can we just say these are just kind of wacky people running for office or how seriously should we take this?
So what I'll say is that there's a level of the level of support for QAnon among these candidates varies. I would put Marjorie Taylor Greene as a true believer, someone who has made it pretty clear that she really, truly believes in this it's like a sincere belief. I would divide that those type of people from candidates who aren't maybe as strong about it, and instead see the conspiracy theory and its supporters as kind of a political constituency, a base within the Republican Party that can reap some type of political benefit for them.
Is there a way to, if a candidate and their supporters believe this, is there a way to translate that into what public policy they might support or vote for?
Yeah. So, I mean, one aspect of QAnon that I think even I've seen people outside of who are believing QAnon are susceptible to and are sympathetic to is this belief about like a deep state, that there's like these perceived secret enemies working to under, like through the bureaucracy or elsewhere, working to undermine kind of Trump and the MAGA agenda. Just speculating, but yeah, if any of them do make it to Congress, it's possible, even if they try to not hide or not be as outspoken about explicit QAnon stuff, maybe that part could be something they push.
Has the Republican Party in any way repudiated QAnon or opined about candidates that are seeking their support?
Not really. I haven't seen much evidence of that. I'll just give an example of one I think that kind of show this, one we haven't mentioned yet. But there's a candidate in Colorado who just won the Republican primary in her district. Her name's Lauren Boebert. She has been sympathetic. She made comments sympathetic to QAnon on a show hosted by a QAnon supporter. And as soon as she won and people started pointing this out, I believe the NRC, I believe it's the National Republican Campaign Committee, had put out a press release pushing whataboutism. So they were basically like, well, what about Democrats in Russia? Rather than confronting QAnon directly. Marjorie Taylor Greene has gotten some pushback, but not because of, from what I've seen, because of QAnon, but because I believe Politico found statements of her making like racist comments. And that's what seems to have gotten her in trouble. And one more case, there's one candidate in Oregon who won her Senate primary. Her name is Joe Ray Perkins. I would put her in the true believers of QAnon. Very strong supporter. The Oregon Republican Party, well, wasn't the most strongest endorsement. They still endorsed her.
Let me read an email from Ted who says, I think that QAnon is the result of Trump voters not being able to understand why Trump didn't deliver on some of his wild campaign promises, such as locking up Hillary Clinton. What do you think of that, Alex?
Yeah, so I do think the conspiracy theory is, to an extent, an attempt to explain or to wash away frustrations that they may have, a belief that maybe failures in carrying out what you know they hoped would be Trump's agenda can be washed away as this all-encompassing like 5D chess secret plot to really take down this pedophile ring, to lock up Hillary Clinton, to give everyone thrown into Guantanamo, which is another part of the conspiracy theory that the enemies will be thrown into Guantanamo Bay, rather than see it for what it is, which is just things haven't happened.
And that's the storm, just the lingo of QAnon. The storm is that then these people are gathered up or arrested and then thrown into Gitmo.
Yeah, so that's what, they call it the storm or, like, the Great Awakening or, like, all these, like, to them are good things will happen and all their wishes will come true and this cabal will be taken down and, you know, and good things for them or what they perceive as good will happen.
Well, let me just quickly reintroduce you. We've got another guest who's going to be joining our conversation. We're talking about QAnon. It's hard to describe in many ways because it's such a crazy conspiracy, paranoid conspiracy theory, reeking of paranoia about a cabal of Hollywood elites and Democratic elites, Democratic Party elites who are involved in a global sex ring involving children. I just put that there. There are many tentacles to this conspiracy theory, but it has found some supporters and has gained traction. I should say that the FBI has basically condemned QAnon, saying that it could potentially lead to domestic terrorism. And Twitter just this week has pulled down sites that are promoting some of these QAnon conspiracy theories. Alex Kaplan is our guest. He's a senior researcher at Media Matters for America. And joining us now is Daniel Jolly, and he's a social psychologist, senior lecturer at Northumbria University, which is in Newcastle, England. And Daniel Jolly, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And let me just make sure our listeners can join our conversation. Radiotimes at WHYY.org. That's the email address. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Let me put to you, Daniel, just a couple of questions. But in a sort of world filled with conspiracy theories and the kind of pantheon of bizarre conspiracy theories, where does QAnon fit?
Really, really interesting discussion, and indeed QAnon. In general, conspiracy beliefs often arise in moments of crisis in society. It can be a rapid political change. It can be a virus outbreak. It's when we are feeling uncertain, we're feeling threatened. We're trying to understand the complex world that we find ourselves in. So in essence, it is just that, trying to understand the world, which means that people can be drawn to conspiracy narratives like QAnon, because it explains the world in a very simple way. It blames a bunch of conspirators for the bad in our society. And indeed, it can also be a motivated process whereby you often believe in conspiracies about the other group. Mm. So Democrats about Republicans, Republicans about Democrats. So when you find yourself in a situation that breeds uncertainty and makes you more susceptible to engaging conspiracy narratives, where you see theories such as QAnon on your Facebook and Twitter, you can be drawn to them because of the environment and also your motivations.
Are there certain kind of people, and by that I mean personality types, that are kind of primed to believe this stuff? I mean, I'll be honest with you, I don't believe anything about QAnon, and I would say probably most people don't, but there is a group of people who have glommed on to these really crazy, outlandish ideas.
That's a great point, that not everyone will believe in conspiracies. There are certain people who may be more susceptible. There's not necessarily a profile of a conspiracy theorist, but there are certain personality quirks that may make you more susceptible. So being a narcissist, having a very positive view about yourself and your group, can make you be more likely to engage in conspiracy theorizing. That's that motivated reasoning, whereby you are going to think the other group is conspiring against you. They're trying to get one up over you. And indeed, that movement can be seen with this conspiracy by that it's very politically orientated, where, you know, it's all based at one party. So, yeah, other things such as the need to be unique, whereby you have some information that is very unique to you, and you can feel kind of motivated to kind of find things that support that viewpoint. Indeed, you fit into biases such as confirmation bias, whereby right. You have this belief that the world is full of conspiracies, the group is conspiring against you, so you then search for information that supports that viewpoint. And things that discredit it, you ignore, but things that support it, that fits right. This viewpoint, you retweet, you engage in. So it's quite a complex kind of profile of a conspiracy theorist, but I think it all comes down to is just trying to understand the world, where it's important that we don't other people and that we don't say they're crazy or, you know, they're weirdos, because that's othering them. Instead, they are engaging in thought processes to just understand what is happening. But, of course, it's based on information that is not accurate. So interventions to think about how we get information across and show people how the skill sets to evaluate evidence is really important. So, for example, if someone is aware of their bias, does that help them?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if anyone's actually looked at that, to be exactly, but it seems like, in essence, priming critical thinking abilities and having that kind of understanding of where the person's coming from. Indeed, understand them. Ask if someone is talking about conspiracy narratives. Try and work out why they're talking about them. What is it they're trying to understand? Indeed, are they saying they feel really uncertain about the climate that we find ourselves in? Well, that could be a cause of their conspiracy theorizing. So actually trying to address that need may help.
Let me just jump in here, because I'm how important is the group? I mean, to be part of a group that believes these conspiracy theories, you mentioned confirmation bias. Does that help to sort of cement the fervor that people have when they believe these things?
That's a really great point. And indeed, some researchers have found that people who are engaged in conspiracy theorizing feel a part of a community of people who are like-minded, who are engaging in similar conspiracy theorizing. Because often, people who believe in conspiracy theories are ostracized. They are maybe from a disadvantaged background, so they're more primed to engage in theorizing. So this identity, where they're looking for the truth, can make them feel part of that community,
right,
which, of course, is a good thing. And you know, conspiracy theories do have a real big impact, and I very much argue that, but they can have positives. And one positive is that community element. But, of course, we could always get community via other routes. It hasn't got to be conspiracy narratives. Similarly, with feeling more empowered by conspiracy narratives, we can do that via other routes. It hasn't got to be just conspiracy theories that give us that motivation.
We're almost up in a break here, but what I hear you saying, Daniel Jolly, is that many people who believe this kind of feel like outsiders, that they're sort of outside of, quote-unquote, I guess, the mainstream.
Absolutely, yeah. That is one of the predictors. Where it comes to demographics, there's not really any sync with gender or age, but definitely on group status plays a big role.
Well, let's take that short break. We'll get back to our conversation talking about conspiracy theories, and specifically talking about QAnon, which has made some pretty big inroads, whether on the Internet or, frankly, even in the Republican Party. That's Daniel Jolly. Again, he's a social psychologist, senior lecturer at Northumbria University. That's in Newcastle, England. Alex Kaplan joining us by Skype. He's a senior researcher at Media Matters for America. And if you've got questions for both of our guests, and I clearly do, you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can pick up the phone and call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Much more to talk about after this very short break. Do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We're talking about conspiracy theories. We're talking about QAnon, which is a conspiracy theory that's been around for a couple of years about a alleged global cabal of elites involved with child sex trafficking. It's been growing in popularity. It has also been condemned by the FBI as a potential source of domestic terrorism. And earlier this week, Twitter actually just took down thousands of QAnon accounts, saying they could lead to offline harm. And again, our guests are Alex Kaplan, senior researcher for Media Matters for America, and Daniel Jolly, a psychologist at Northumbria University, which is in England. Let me go back to you, Alex. What has QAnon been saying about the pandemic?
So the coronavirus has been basically, the QAnon community has been able to spread multiple or has spread multiple conspiracy theories about coronavirus. Q itself has, summing up, paraphrasing, is basically said that it's overhyped, or that it's been planned, or basically is being used to derail Trump, to harm him in the upcoming election. What's interesting is that if you take out Q for a second, the QAnon community itself has actually spread its own conspiracy theories, some kind of fitting with what Q said, but some kind of on its own, some like that it's actually like a cover to like take down the deep state, or more what Q's saying, that it's being used to harm Trump and that some plot to harm him. But besides that, I mean, the QAnon community has been involved with multiple conspiracy theories, that or QAnon supporters spread multiple conspiracy theories about coronavirus. I believe you mentioned one about 5G towers earlier.
Right.
Another is that Bill Gates is planning to use coronavirus to create a vaccine to microchip people, which is not true. But QAnon supporters played a big role in spreading that. They've spread multiple things. I believe another one, actually, a QAnon supporter was one of the first people to push another one about Bill Gates, is that he patented the virus like years ago, which means he like had some cure or was involved with creating it in some manner. That's another one connected to the QAnon community. So they've spread multiple misinformation campaigns about the virus.
Dana Jolly, let me go back to you. And I mean, obviously, this has dangerous implications. If people are believing things that are not true about the pandemic, it can have serious both personal but also community-wide health implications. I'm curious about whether there are similar conspiracy theories in England.
What you say, though, is absolutely correct. There's some real-world consequences. And as you discussed earlier on with the FBI raising it as a domestic terrorist threat, and indeed there's many examples of conspiracy narratives being in manifestos. And we've also found this in data, whereby people who believe in conspiracy theories are more likely to support violence towards those who they perceive to be conspiring. Mm-hmm. And I recently published a paper that looked into 5G conspiracy beliefs, because I'm sure you've seen and know there are many, many, many attacks on the infrastructure with telepylons and engineers. And we found that there is a link between 5G conspiracy beliefs and willingness to act in a violent manner against the telecoms community. And we found that these effects were associated with anger, whereby potentially the conspiracy theory makes you feel angry and you want to go out and call them out on that conspiracy. So, for example, set alight to the pylons because it can stop COVID-19. So there are some really real-world implications of these conspiracy beliefs. And indeed, we do see them also in the UK where, as mentioned, there's, of course, the 5G element. But if you believe that the 5G is a hoax or there's something to do with the vaccine, people are less likely to want to follow advice from the government, in essence, which could be to do with social distancing. It could be to do with the vaccine. And again, there's data that demonstrates that people who believe in conspiracy theories will not follow that advice, which, of course, is really worrying. Like, when we think about the vaccine, that people already are saying, no, I don't want it, because of anti-vaccine content. So it's a very kind of important issue that we need to really think about and tackle.
Well, Alex Kaplan, let me go back to you. And someone left a message saying, I don't think it's useful to just shut down discussions of conspiracy theories. I also take issue with the term and think that it's now used to denigrate any ideas that don't follow the mainstream. Picking up on what Daniel Jolly said, which is we need to take it seriously. We need to be, I guess, sympathetic to people or at least understanding of people's beliefs in conspiracy theories. Going back to QAnon, what do you think is the way to counter someone's belief in all the things that are affiliated, associated with QAnon?
Yeah, so I know that the experts have kind of suggested sometimes certain ways to deal with people supporting conspiracy theories, being sympathetic. There's a way to point it out that it's false in a way that, I guess, doesn't offend them or make them kind of cocoon even more into this belief. Maybe trying to be understanding of why, to a certain extent, they might believe parts of this. Try to be sympathetic to that, but point out maybe, you know, maybe you haven't thought about it this way. You know, this might not be quite right. But yeah, it's very delicate being able to change people's feelings in some of this.
You had mentioned Jeffrey Epstein, who was involved in pedophilia as a sex offender. So I wonder, maybe Daniel Jolly, I can toss this back to you. Whereas when it comes to conspiracy theories, if there is kind of a thin element of truth that's embedded, and that gives it some kind of cachet.
I think absolutely that grain of truth often is there. So that example is a perfect example of that actually happening. But then it then can have unfounded beliefs spring from that, where there's one tiny bit of truth that suddenly turns into this unfounded belief that is just so different to what that first bit of truth actually was. And indeed, going back to the intervention, it is a real timely, important topic, but it's really difficult. And recently, today, Twitter have come out to say, you know, they're taking on QAnon content from their platforms because it leads to real-world harm. And one hand, I really support that because it's important that we make sure our platforms are full of facts. But it's worth flagging that conspiracy theories have existed for a very long time. And indeed, they've bloomed without the internet. JFK, as one of the conspiracies, for example, has an incredible number of people believing those conspiracies. And this was born without the internet. So the idea to suggest that if we take them offline, they're going to go away is probably unlikely. They're going to go to other platforms, other places. So instead, I think we need to think about how we develop these skill sets so people can think about the conspiracy narratives before they actually believe and share them. So whilst I do think it's important to make sure that, you know, they're off our social media platforms, just to make sure there is a space still for people to ask questions. Because by shutting them off straight away, that may actually fuel the conspiracy belief because they are obviously being silenced.
I mean,
it's a real tricky line to go through, and I haven't got all the answers, but it's just, I think it's a very kind of multifaceted approach that we need to have.
I agree with you. I mean, it's sort of that whole cancel culture conundrum. Here's a message from Matt, and I'll put this to you, Alex. It says, QAnon comes from message board culture that is often racist, and accusations that people are getting children has anti-Semitic overtones. Can the guest speak about that? Can you speak to that, Alex?
I agree that the QAnon community has QAnon supporters, the QAnon community as a whole has anti-Semitic undertones. I'll give an example of this. Last year, there was in Washington D.C. there was a rally for QAnon supporters to support and push the conspiracy theory. There were two major organizers, promoters of it. They're well known in the QAnon community. One of them, in the rally itself and at a podcast, I believe a few days before the rally, openly discussed what he talked about as the Jewish question. Another one, the other promoter, this was months down after the rally, tweeted what's known online as the echo, which is three parentheses around a word or a name, which came from white nationalists and neo-Nazis and is used to target Jews. Essentially. So I've seen other things. The example, the message board that Q is on now, which is known as Akun, there is a specific message board on that message board site that where Q posts and other people. And on that message board, there you can find a lot of anti-Semitism.
Wow.
So there is real anti-Semitic undertones in the QAnon community.
Daniel Jolly, here's a question. It's not related to anti-Semitism, but an email from Cliff came in a couple of minutes ago. Is there a religious element to QAnon? Do you think people that believe conspiracy theories, and it's interesting that this, whoever Q is, or perhaps isn't, that there is this sort of mysterious person who's at the center of this particular conspiracy theory.
I think the link between those two facets is understanding the world, because a religion offers the understanding for, you know, all our life questions and why we're here and kind of explains everything that is happening, which means that it can address some of the needs that we have, you know, need to feel secure, need to feel in control, less, you know, more certain, less anxious. A religion can provide that kind of relief, which is also what conspiracy theories at least promise to provide. In reality, they probably don't actually deliver those things, because although initially it may make you feel more certain because you think, okay, I know what is happening in the world, but it's been shown that it actually can increase mistrust over time. Because if you start believing in one conspiracy, you then kind of start questioning many other different things. So with religion, it may kind of address those needs quite quickly, but with conspiracy narratives, it can become a very kind of cycle where you may believe in many others. And indeed, a consistent finding is that if you believe in one conspiracy, you're very, very lucky to believe in many, many others. So believe in anti-vaccine content, climate change, believing about 9/11. These all kind of merge around the idea that the world is full of conspiracies and there's a conspiracy group kind of plotting against you and your group. So I can see that the connection with this, the factors that may predict religion and conspiracy beliefs, but I definitely don't think conspiracy beliefs really address the needs that it promises to suggest it does.
Alex, I'm curious what you think the fact that Twitter is basically shut down the tweets involving QAnon. What do you think that will do to QAnon? Where do you think it'll go? What do you think the impact will be?
I think it's an ongoing development. It's hard for me to say for sure. I know some QAnon accounts want to stay on Twitter, see it as an important home for them, and will fight this in some aspect. I mean, some are trying to evade these restrictions already, like typing 17 and on, because Q is the 17th letter of the alphabet. Q, literally C-U-E, Anon.
Oh, C-U-E.
These things are going to get caught by Twitter,
right.
But it's just an example. Some have already started promoting other sites that they're going to, or specifically one platform that some conservatives in general have tried pushing is called Parler, or Parlay, or they call it Parler now. But which is another social media platform that is kind of friendly to conservatives, supposedly. But the issue with that site is or platform is that it's a little harder to search. It's kind of glitchy. And it's basically a bit of an echo chamber. It's mostly just conservatives. And I think that's not exactly actually totally appealing to conservatives to not have any non-conservatives or other people to appeal to or to spread their message. So I think it's an ongoing development. And
sure.
There's other platforms like
sure.
Facebook.
Daniel Jolly, we're almost out of time here, but someone had asked whether you think that people who have been victims of child sex abuse are fine QAnon a place to go because at the center of this belief system is that there's a pedophile ring. Do you think there's some connection there?
Well, interesting. So we do know that past experiences, so trauma, discrimination, bullying, in essence trauma, or broadly, can make you more susceptible to engaging in conspiracy theorizing. Often, in the case, for example, with bullying, it may be the case it breeds paranoia. And this paranoia means you're looking for threats, those are out to get you, and it means you're more likely to engage in conspiracy theorizing. Mm-hmm. So there is some work linking trauma to these types of beliefs. But back to the point that I said right at the start, it's just trying to understand the world. And people who find themselves in disadvantage, it offers a simple solution for the complex problems we find ourselves in society.
There's one more question. I'm going to squeeze it in with a short answer from you, Daniel Jolly. So how do you expect people, how do you want people to engage with people who believe conspiracy theories in 30 seconds or less?
Back to the point of not just othering them and calling them crazy, but very much kind of talk to them about their beliefs. Try and find out the pinpoint. Is it their desire to be in control, uncertain, or to feel certainty? And if it is, try and help them work through the facts and get them to think critically.
I appreciate both of you joining us today in Radio Times. Daniel Jolly, thanks so much.
Pleasure. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. He's a social psychologist, senior lecturer at Northumbria University in Newcastle, England, and he specializes in conspiracy theories. Alex Kaplan, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you so much for having me on.
You're very welcome. He's senior researcher at Media Matters for America. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show. You can find us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter. Many ways to connect with the show. And I should add that we have probably thousands of podcasts that you can listen to. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. The show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you so much for joining us.